Welcome, Yash. So wonderful to speak to you. Being an originally an Aussie, I obviously know about Telstra. Tell me a little bit about Telstra Ventures and what you guys do.
Yeah, no, happy to do that. And thanks for having me on, Pemo. The best way to think about Telstra Ventures is, we're an investor investing in lighthouse entrepreneurs, typically at the post-product market fit kind of inflection stage, right? So companies that really, have found sort of, some early traction, maybe 1 to 2 million and kind of ARR revenues. However, the company sort of accounts for that. And then really, seeing strong growth and where we can add value in several ways. One, not just capital, but also opening up new markets in Asia Pac and Australia, just given sort of the Telstra connection. But then also ways that we can leverage data science to help many of our portfolio companies with everything from benchmarking versus their competitors, as well as other ways that they can be more efficient with their operations. So that's really the best way to think of this. We have just under a billion in assets under management, and closed kind of our third fund, over a year ago, that we're actively deploying, right now, in 2024. So we're pretty excited about this year, and are sort of cautiously optimistic, I'll sort of say, about 2024 and beyond.
And what about some of your particular investments? What are they looking like?
Yeah, so I tend to focus a lot on consumer fintech. I'd say vertical SaaS and sort of I'd sort of say gaming and esports as well. But in particular, more recently, I've sort of spent a lot more time in fintech. In terms of areas that I really like to focus, it's not just consumer, but it's a lot of the plumbing behind many of the top kind of consumer fintech apps out there. And we've had three or four great investments that we've invested in across the space. As an example, we're big believers in sort of the growth of super apps, kind of sort of the convergence of effectively e-commerce and fintech, similar to what we've seen in Asia. And having that happen in sort of the West has been sort of early, but we've been investing in a few companies. One of them is Super.com, which is really an exciting business that's helping many kind of lower FICO score, lower socioeconomic folks in the United States build credit and effectively enter the US financial kind of grid in a more thoughtful way. So, for us, I think there's a lot of areas where we feel like existing fintech or even larger incumbents are servicing higher net worth older individuals, but millennials, Gen Zs, and others, they haven't sort of been able to access many of these services. So many of the fintech companies we're investing in are democratizing this access or these capabilities for the masses.
Great. And I've got quite a few founders that I've supported over the years in the San Francisco Bay Area who have been trying to work with fintech with the underserved. So that's a subject close to my heart. Originally, when I was in Australia many moons ago, and I was going through a divorce with three young babies, really, the banks wouldn't give me any credit cards. And since then, I've been gung ho about fintech and cryptocurrencies, any alternate, not incumbent sort of means of supporting people that are in difficult situations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we haven't announced it yet, but one of the most recent companies we led a Series A in is a company that's really allowing many underserved immigrant populations in the United States access basic financial services. So this is like unlocking and building credit, getting access to basic savings and checking accounts, automated tax prep, things that we take maybe for granted, but really allowing users, and especially this population, to kind of take control of their own finances to basically unlock credit and basic services. And so, we're really excited about this platform. But then, there's other areas that we feel that maybe you and your children could have benefited from things that are around kind of wealth tech 3.0 or sort of wealth building, right? Typically served for reserved for private wealth managers at Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley that serve high net worth individuals, but why shouldn't everyone be able to access those capabilities, that education, and that type of opportunity to kind of grow your future net worth? that's my kind of personal thesis. And we've been executing on a few investments in that space.
And do you see a lot of founders or startups coming to you with these sort of fintech startups? And the other point that I just wanted to make is that I came from Europe originally when I came to Silicon Valley 15 years ago or so. And I was really shocked that it was so slow uptake on fintech in Silicon Valley or in the US. So first question is, why do you think that was? Obviously now it's booming, hopefully. It has its ups and downs. Do you want to talk a little bit about the market in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think there's a lot of issues, that maybe, cause entrepreneurs and sort of consumers to be a bit more reticent, right? First of all, it is hard to switch over from some of the big banks in the US, whether you talk about JP Morgan Chase or Wells Fargo, Bank of America, that have developed decades of trust with many consumers. Having said that, they have not catered in a more customized, personalized way, either through digital platforms or otherwise, to some of the fastest growing populations, in the United States and globally, frankly. I'd also say there's always been a lot of regulatory scrutiny around some of the earlier fintechs that, particularly those in lending that were, I guess I'll be crude and call it, were a bit more predatory around kind of making loans that were sort of, probably not in the best interest of anyone, right? The consumers that were taking these loans or otherwise. And so I think you had a lot of companies that were offering, fast loans and easy ways to kind of access credit, but were not, these consumers were not able to kind of pay that back, especially with, sort of that higher interest. So, I think we saw a wave of companies like that. Some kind of navigated through some of that regulatory scrutiny and have kind of shifted to more, I'll call it more ethical, thoughtful ways of monetizing, particularly lower kind of socioeconomic populations in the US. And right. So, I'd sort of say third, it's sort of been, a recognition that many of the existing platforms offered by the big banks that I previously mentioned haven't really had intuitive experiences that are native to younger populations, right? So whether it's, mobile, cloud, and now AI, we're seeing this kind of convergence of, really interesting technologies that, now it just becomes very easy for a developer and someone who's very in tune with sort of that demographic to kind of build something that is far more effective and far more, profound in terms of, making an impact than, maybe 5, even 10 years ago. And so AI is an area that we continue to monitor, not just across fintech, but how it's disrupting many other kind of sectors in a more thoughtful way. Sorry, I'll pause there, Pamela, and see if that all makes sense.
Sure. I was just going to add that I ran one AI panel many years ago, and it was the only panel, the only demand we had for a panel in all those years of running events in Silicon Valley. So I'm just interested now that all you hear about is AI. So I'm wondering what your perspective is. Is it as big as it appears? Is it going to disrupt other industries? What's your perspective?
Yeah, we've seen some really interesting ways that AI will disrupt some of these kind of, existing financial services platforms, but in a way that augments the way, existing processes work. So as an example, we've seen a lot of pitches around AI co-pilots in accounting and finance to assist with things like, more basic financial analysis or auditing and bookkeeping, detecting fraud, using AI to, do things like close, quarterly books for publicly listed companies. Typically that takes, several months sometimes at end before, these large publicly listed companies can kind of report to the market. So We think that people are using AI in a thoughtful way to kind of give these existing auditors and bookkeepers superpowers, I'd sort of say, and be more efficient with their use of time. The other area I'd sort of say is we're seeing a lot of our existing companies, particularly in kind of the wealth management space, that are using LLMs, large language models, to basically you know, provide more thoughtful advice, you know, to consumers. And so that's something that, you know, some of our portfolio companies are actually tinkering with right now. You obviously have to be very careful because many of these LLMs, you know, could give kind of advice that is not necessarily, you know, appropriate. And so you do have to be very careful around that. It's actually, I think, the reason why if you ask ChatGPT for, you know, advice on whether you should invest in a stock or not, they actually refuse to answer it because, you know, there will be regulatory scrutiny around that. But yeah, I do think there is a lot of opportunity to kind of get better around kind of financial advice, leveraging, you know, LLMs that are highly kind of fine tuned to specific situations for many kind of consumers in the US. So those are just some examples of areas that we continue to see pitches around and I get excited about.
Great. And obviously, we're in very different territory now than we were years ago when I started the FinTech events and interviews. So I'm just wondering how things have changed with all the dramas that have happened in the FinTech space, particularly with, you know, cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin problems. What's your overview on that? Because obviously you've got a great seat at the table.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting because I'd say for the last, you know, kind of definitely 12 to 24 months, we've seen this narrative, particularly in the media around, you know, consumer fintech or fintech in general, really struggling. And a large reason for that was many of these companies raised in 2021, in sort of this zero interest rate environment where money was pretty free and readily available at pretty inflated valuations. And then naturally in 2022 and 2023, we saw down rounds as these companies were looking to survive, not get more offensive, but just survive. And then as we emerge in 2024, many of these later stage, you know, sort of, I'd sort of say fintech platforms have, you know, emerged with better unit economics and are poised, I think, to do, you know, get more offensive and aggressive. And so I think the narrative has been focused on the late stage and publicly listed fintech companies, companies like Robinhood and Coinbase that really, really struggled in terms of their valuation multiples in the public markets. So that's on one end of the spectrum. That's kind of the narrative that I think people have talked about. But then on the other end, when we talk about the areas that we focus on here at Telstra Ventures, kind of Series A and B, early stages, you know, many of the smartest minds and builders, they've been tinkering away and continuing to get great traction in various, you know, sort of areas that they're kind of, you know, disrupting across fintech. And so for them, I call these builders, you know, effectively, they never really cared about what public multiples that, you know, Coinbase or Robinhood were trading at, right? They're still early. You know, if they do go public or see a trade sale, it might be 5 to 7 years. They have a longer hold period for the investors backing them. So those are the companies that we've really focused on. And we've seen are growing 3, 4, 5x year on year, sort of quietly building away while this narrative in the media around kind of the Robinhood's Coinbase is getting killed has been sort of, you know, effectively, you know, putting a heart in an arrow or a dagger in the heart of, you know, fintech. And we, you know, kind of take maybe a contrarian view that it's actually, you know, really, really robust and strong. And the people that matter most, the builders, they're seeing great traction. So I'd sort of say that's kind of how we view kind of 2024 and beyond. And in particular, because you talked about cryptocurrency, I wanted to touch on that. You know, there's no secret that Web3 and blockchain, you know, had a rough winter in 2022 and 2023. But one of the things that we continue to look at is core blockchain developer activity that our data science team kind of monitors through kind of GitLab repositories and other kind of sources of data. And we never saw that really dip during that crypto winter to the extent that, you know, crypto investors and speculators kind of dipped in terms of them pulling out of the market. And so from our perspective, we're seeing, you know, hey, there might be some light at the end of the tunnel with steadier macroeconomic conditions. The SEC's approval of a bunch of Bitcoin ETFs that we've seen, you know, ARK, BlackRock, and then, you know, this halving event around Bitcoin that could drive Bitcoin to new heights. I mean, we've seen it in the past few days at over $60,000, right? At almost all-time highs. So, you know, for us, we think Web3 and blockchain will surge in 2024 and beyond after a pretty rough 2022 and 2023. And with that means more actual revenue generating projects and sort of Web 2.5 and Web 3, I'll kind of call it, which I think if, you know, you look at a previous kind of hype cycle in crypto, there was, you know, less of a focus on actual revenues and more just kind of, you know, speculators and people issuing tokens. So people have learned their lesson and are now going to start, you know, building, you know, at greater velocity.
So hopeful. This is why I've stuck with it for so many years, really hearing about Bitcoin in 2008 when I was in Dublin in Ireland. I've been a fan ever since, but all the speculation, the regulatory problems obviously have been a damper, but you're so positive. Really appreciate this conversation, and I know that all my listeners will too. Thank you so much, Yash.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
All the best with your investments. Thank you.
Thank you, Pemo. Have a great rest of your day.